So we find the disciples now on Easter night. Now, only hours before, we see Peter and the other disciple, the beloved disciple, running to the tomb. They see the linen cloths and the head wrapping lying there, rolled up by itself. We see Mary weeping, bending over into the tomb and seeing the two angels there. And then we see her running back to the disciples and telling them the good news that I have seen the Lord. But tonight, all of this activity has come to a screeching halt, and all of the disciples are gathered in the meeting house where they were accustomed to meeting. All the doors are locked, all the windows latched, and they are cowering in fear, afraid perhaps that those who strung up Jesus will come and find them and string up them too. Is the door locked? I don't know. I didn't lock it. I locked it. You locked the back one too? Yeah, I locked that one. Are you sure? What about the windows? Latched them. Could you go check the back door again? All right. Just to emphasize the dramatic turn of events and how quickly they locked the doors, there is no narrative content between the verse where Mary says, I have seen the Lord, and she goes and tells the disciples, and this admission that all the doors are locked and they are gathered hiding away as the sun sets. There's no space between the content. There are no other disciples that we see responding to this good news, I have seen the Lord. No one else other than Peter and the beloved disciple get up and run back to the tomb to see if what was told to them is true. At least John doesn't tell us they did. We don't see an astonished Peter. We don't see a disbelieving James. We don't see a stunned Andrew. We don't hear any follow-up questions from Bart. That's Bartholomew. I call him Bart. At least not yet. We see none of these things. It's just lockdown. It's just bolts clicked and chains clinked and latches clacked and hatches battened down and disciples huddled together, cowering in fear. How do you think Jesus approaches this situation? I don't know what he's been doing all day in his new risen state, but when he comes to the house, what do you think he does first? Do you think he finds a crack in the window and peers in and sees them all huddled there eating silently, and then he just sighs? Maybe he wiggles the doorknob on the front door and finds that it's locked, and he rolls his eyes. Revelation says that Jesus says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. Maybe he knocked and didn't get an answer and just moved through the door somehow, because for all we can tell from the evidence, Jesus just sort of appears out of the ether. John says he came and stood among them. But let it be noted that the first Sunday evening worship service of Christian history, the first reaction to the great, wonderful, astonishing news of the resurrection is a fearful retreat. Fight or flight? This is flight. Now, they tried fight. Remember a few days ago in the Kidron Valley? They're all gathered together. Jesus is leading them. He knows there's trouble afoot because he knows Judas has gone on to betray him. And sure enough, Judas and a battalion of Roman centurions show up, authorities all together, and they come to get him. And Jesus begins a conversation with him by telling him his name, I am he, when they say, where is Jesus? And his name is so powerful and stunning to them that they stumble and fall backward. But they get back up. And Peter, probably with the best of intentions, takes a sword and slices off the ear of the high priest's slave, Malchus. And Jesus turns to Peter and rebukes him, and he says, "Put your sword back in its sheath. Am I not to drink the cup that the Father has given me?" So we tried the fighting, we tried the drawing of the sword, and now we see Peter, perhaps, I just have to imagine Peter still has that sword at this point, stuck on his thigh, sitting in the corner, wondering what he's going to do. He didn't see the risen Jesus. He's just been told about the risen Jesus. All he's seen is the signs, the evidence. Still not convinced. Perhaps he is still sitting there with the weapon in his holster, ready to fight. But fight would not take him anywhere. They are not free to flee. They're not free to bolt. They're only free, they think, to tremble. So this brings to mind a question. Let's say you're a veteran Christian and you've grown up in church your whole life. You know this story backward and forwards. Or let's say you're a newcomer and what I'm saying so far is more or less new to you. Isn't it interesting that the first thing we discover after Easter is that Jesus refuses to let any believer flee or fight? There is no fighting. There are no weapons that cannot hide behind them. We also cannot hide behind locked doors, because one way or another, Jesus is coming for us to get us, to tell us this good news. The sword he rebukes, and the locked doors he simply passes through. It's enough to remind you of the prayer, the poem the psalmist prays. Where can I go? Where can I go from you, O Lord? Where can I go to flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, that is death, you are there. If I take to the wings of the morning and fly to the farthest ends of the sea, you are there. Your right hand is there to hold me and guide me. Surely darkness will cover me, but even there, the dark is not darkness to you, and night is as day to you. So if on this side of the resurrection we have been disarmed of both sword and key, what is it that this risen Jesus wants from us? What does he have to do with us? What are God's intentions for us? Well, the first thing he says is peace. Peace be with you. And not only does he say peace, he actually breathes on them peace. Do you remember in Genesis when God creates the first human being? The water springs up over the dusty ground. It courses across the dry ground and makes a mud. God scoops God's hand into this muck, this clay, and begins to fashion a creature in God's image. He shapes the creature into God's image, and then what does he do? I imagine God lifts this creature up to his mouth and blows into its nostrils and its mouth new life. Behold, the very first human being. Well, on the other side of the resurrection, isn't this what happens? God takes that primitive place in the back of our minds that always pushes us into an either-or scenario, fight or flight, and this Jesus breathes that old us out of us. New life into us. Refashions our very brain matter into a third way of peacemaking and forgiveness, and makes of us, in fact, new creations who are capable of passing through locked doors. It is a new kind of existence. That is what God would have of us on the other side of Easter. That God would make of us emissaries of forgiveness. Think of yourself as having been deputized this Sunday to go and practice a power that you never knew you had. The power to transverse barriers that you never thought you could, to pick locks you didn't know you had keys to pass through barriers and walls and corridors that heretofore have always prevented you from reaching out to the other person and saying, I forgive you, you are forgiven, and now you have that power. Now, when I was in college, this is how hard this is. When I was in college, I remember walking through campus, and there was a street that ran through the campus that people would drive down back and forth all day. And just out of habit, I come up to the street, and I see a car coming, and then I hear a strange sound as I wait for them to pass, kind of a squirting sound. And the car keeps going, and I look down at my brand new t-shirt that I won in a soccer tournament, and there was a straight line of ketchup all the way across. And I didn't even notice it until they'd already gone down the street in their little 5 Series BMW. I still fantasize about chasing down these guys and dumping a gallon of Heinz on them. Just finally, who are these people? I feel like when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God, who was that guy? Because I want to go talk to him. I've got a little surprise for him too. Well, that's just a tiny little slight. It's actually pretty funny. I mean, it was mean, but for you, it was funny because you're laughing at me. But think about just what a almost imperceptible slight that is in the grand scheme of human life. And think about the fact that I still harbor an imagination about it. That's how hard this work is given to us to do. But then you hear a story like this. Just a couple of years ago, there was a gentle man, Robert Godwin Jr., lived in Cleveland, was having Easter dinner with his family. And one of his practices was to go down the street and just pick up recycling. He had a little plastic bag with him. He left his family, said, y'all have a good Easter, and he shut the door. And he walked out onto the street and was doing his thing. A madman pulled up into a car and was filming his actions for Facebook, live streaming. He said, I'm going to go kill this man right now. He got out of his car, walked up to Robert, and started a conversation with him and then shot him at point blank range. His daughters, Tanya and Debbie, just weeks later, they were interviewed by CNN and said, what I take most from my father is he taught us about God. He taught us how to fear. He taught us how to love. And he taught us how to forgive. Each one of us, they said, forgives the killer. They said he didn't talk about it, neither he nor our mother. They lived it. Sometimes we'd say, but our neighbors did this to us. Do you mean we've got to forgive them? And he said, we have to. He deputized the whole family after that Easter dinner to go and forgive the hardest thing that you can imagine. In fact, it's so hard that when Jesus comes and tells the disciples as they're huddled there, peace be with you, they rejoice. He shows them his hands and his side. And they rejoice. You can imagine them erupting with joy. And then he says, peace be with you. Now I send you to forgive. Send you just as the Father has sent me to forgive. And if you forgive the sins of any, they're forgiven. If you retain the sins of any, they're retained. And it doesn't say after he says that, that they erupt in joy. And yet, And yet Jesus comes into our huddled gathering here and in this very moment says to all of us, if you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained. It's Easter now, so go. This is your work. I don't know. I mean, I'm still mad about the ketchup. I'm terrified of that day when the Easter, hard, difficult Easter work comes to me for real. Maybe you are too. You know, this first Easter news, it's terrifying. But isn't it good?